Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you had a fantastic Tuesday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, and let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're going to talk about today, by far one of the most requested non-political stories out there, and I think we need to start things off a little bit light. According to the latest edition of the World Health Organization's Diagnostic Handbook, gaming disorder should be considered a mental disorder. And specifically, they added gaming disorder to the 11th edition of its ICD, International Statistical Classification of Diseases. And they say there are three criteria necessary to diagnose someone with gaming disorder. One, there's impaired control over when, how long, how frequently, etc. they game. Two, the person does not stop gaming despite the negative consequences they have in their life. Maybe here they're doing badly at their job, school, less time with friends, less interaction. And three, the compulsive gaming strains that person's life or relationships. And according to the World Health Organization, this pattern of behavior needs to last at least 1 year. Or less if the requirements are met and the symptoms are severe. Now, as far as this seeming like a big deal or not, one of the WHO members from the department that proposed this change seems to be downplaying it. That being Vladimir Pozniak, who said, "I'm not creating a precedent," adding that the World Health Organization is just following the trends, the developments which have taken place in populations and in the professional field. But with this new diagnosis, the classification, there has been pushback, and not just from gamers. You have many people pointing to the DSM, which is published in the United States. DSM standing for Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And there, it classifies internet gaming disorders as something that requires more research. Also, back in 2016, we saw experts writing a letter to the World Health Organization advising against including a gaming disorder in the ICD, saying that the existing research was poor, that there was no actual medical consensus, albeit that there was fighting. And those experts even wrote, "The act of formalizing this disorder, even as a proposal, has negative medical, scientific, public health, societal, and human rights fallout that should be considered." And even more recently, you have people like psychologist Anthony Bean, who actually see gaming as a positive thing. He said, "I'm a clinician and a researcher, so I see people who play video games and believe themselves to be on the lines of addicted." He also added that in his experience, gaming is used more as a coping mechanism for either anxiety or depression. And also adding that the three qualifiers to say if you have this disorder or not are far too broad. Also pointing out that there's nothing to differentiate mild to severe forms of this new diagnosis, and calling this label premature. And I will say my personal reaction to this is it's a very instinctive pushback. For example, I saw the BBC publish an article that was initially titled "Computer Game Addiction. I spend 20 plus hours a week gaming." And my initial response is, 20 hours a week isn't insane. When I was a teenager and then a young man in my 20s, 20 hours a week, it was lightweight stuff.
I pumped those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers in this racket.
It was my preferred form of entertainment over TV, movies, books, whatever. And it wasn't always just me locked up in my room, although there was a lot of that. There was also me playing Pokemon Red and then using that game as a way to interact with other kids. Even as I grew up, every college party I went to, like, someone was playing Smash. And even more so now when I look at games like Fortnite, which you can play for free, which is insane. It's a great form of entertainment on the cheap, even if you're purchasing a few cosmetics here or there. Right, just from a budget standpoint, I mean, to go see a movie in LA, it costs like $15 to $20, whereas I can play this game an infinite number of hours for free. But I also have to acknowledge that is my personal experience, and it's always been one that has been very healthy. Because then on the other side, I do have personal experiences of having a roommate that lost multiple jobs because he decided he just wanted to stay home, smoke weed, and play Final Fantasy Online all the time. And so for me, for my opinion, he's always served as the example of someone that pulled really, really far back from society and could be someone that would be inside of this classification. But of course, his story, much like my own, is a very local story, a very central story. So it's important to look more international. And so we look at places like South Korea that have gaming addiction rehabilitation centers. And the numbers there are far different, and it's not a new topic. I mean, there are reports coming out about this years ago. And some, like this one from Business Insider, pointing out that teens are spending up to 88 hours a week gaming. Which I will say, and give in there, that 88 hours of anything a week seems excessive. But to then come back to the ICD, to come back to the story saying 20 hours a week, here's my gaming addiction story, that still, to me, personally seems ludicrous. And so that's why, to me, this move and stories like this, it just seem like a continued effort to villainize video games over other forms of media. I mean, just look at most any other form of media, specifically TV shows. It is so common to consume an enormous amount of TV. The binge watching is an understood and accepted form of consuming all of a TV show all at once, despite depending on the show, it being 8 to 20 hours. I mean, you had a Nielsen study back in 2016 saying that the average American consumes more than 5 hours of TV a day. If we're going by the per week model, you're talking about over 35 hours a week on average. But we're not out there saying that AMC's the devil because they decide to have a Breaking Bad marathon, nor should we, in my opinion. But that said, I do do want to pass the question off to you. What is your opinion about the World Health Organization saying that gaming disorder should be considered a mental health disorder? Do you think that it makes complete sense, or no, you think it is completely ridiculous? Also, what do you think about the comparisons between television and video games? Is there a difference because one is more passive, the other is more interactive? And also, if you do believe that makes them different at an important level, do you think it makes it worse or better? Main point, let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. But from that, I want to share some stuff I love today, and today in Awesome brought to you by Blue Apron. And Blue Apron, of course, is the fantastic service that allows you to create delicious chef-designed recipes at home. They offer two types of plans, the two-person plan where you get 2 to 3 recipes, each designed to serve 2 people. You have the family plan, 2 to 4 recipes designed to serve 4 people. And it is so convenient and so easy. All meals are designed to be prepared in just 40 minutes or less. Blue Apron recipes are delivered in a refrigerated box so ingredients will stay fresh even if you're not home when your package arrives. They offer a large selection of recipes and they're always adding new dishes to their menu every week. Blue Apron prices also start at just $7.49 per serving and there's no commitment, so you can skip or cancel the service at any time. And so if you want to check it out, you want to insert some awesome into your life, just click that link in the description to get started. And also, you probably want to act on it fast because even better, the first 100 people that sign up with that link get $50 off the first 2 weeks of Blue Apron. And the first bit of awesome today is actually kind of an update to people that are a part of DeFrancoElite.com, the DeFranco Now show that we are testing. And yes, I know Android users, you want to be a part of it. You are definitely on the timeline. I love you and I'm sorry. But main point, we just put out the newest test for the DeFranco Now show. I think that it's good enough that we're going to actually release it later this week to the public. But if you want to check that out or you haven't seen the pilot yet, I'll include a link down below so you can join it. It is by far my favorite thing that we have tested. It just needs a really good graphics package and some tweaks, but anyway, link down below. We had our OG buddies at Epic Mealtime doing the spiciest bacon ever. Then for those of you that are about to jump into Luke Cage Season 2, we had Mike Coulter recapping Season 1 in 10 minutes. You got the trailer for Searching. We also got a trailer for Season 3 of one of my favorite series on Netflix, Last Chance U. And if you want to see the full versions of everything, I just shared the secret link of the day, anything at all. Links, as always, are in the description down below. And then let's talk about updates around the immigration child separation story we covered yesterday. Now, if you didn't see that breakdown, it's essentially this fact. I highly recommend you check it out first. But the oversimplified, non-specific TLDR to bring you up to speed. Attorney General Jeff Sessions weeks ago announced a zero-tolerance policy. So now when you have a family trying to illegally cross into the United States, the family gets separated. Previously, you saw federal authorities opting to release entire families so not to separate them. But now that is changing because all adults will be prosecuted. So now you have these children being separated from their parents and being processed through a system. And reportedly, as of yesterday, after the zero-tolerance policy was announced, 2,000 children have been separated from their parents. We then talked about how the Trump administration is trying to throw this on Democrats, why many others are saying, no, this is not a Democrat issue, this is a Trump administration issue. We even saw a good number of Republicans speaking out against what was happening here. Once again, that's an oversimplification. If you want the deep details, watch that video, but here are the updates. Now, when we released yesterday's video, one of the big points was that the media was not allowed to take pictures or video of some facilities, and instead we got those from the government. But yesterday, a nonprofit newsroom by the name of ProPublica released audio of 10 Central American children who had been separated from their parents. The audio was reportedly recorded inside a U.S. Customs and Border Protection detention center. The person who recorded the audio has not been identified for fear of retaliation. As far as who gave ProPublica the audio, that was civil rights attorney Jennifer Harbury. And according to the unidentified person who recorded this audio, they said that the children in it are between the ages of 4 and 10 years old. And according to ProPublica, the children appear to have been in the detention center for less than 24 hours, so that their distress at having been separated from their parents was still raw. And something you hear a number of times in this audio, you have children crying for their parents.
No llores. Vas a llegar con... Mira, ella te va a explicar y te va a ayudar. ¿Cierto?
Con... Te va a pasar con su consulado.
El papá.
You also hear what is reportedly a 6-year-old Salvadoran girl pleading for someone to call her aunt. And according to ProPublica, they were able to contact the aunt, but the aunt said that she could not help her niece because she and her own 9-year-old daughter were seeking asylum. And according to the aunt, the girl in the audio is still in a shelter. Reportedly, she has been warned by authorities that her mother may be deported without her. The aunt saying, "It was the hardest moment in my life. She's crying and begging me to go get her. She says, I promise I'll behave, but please get me out of here. I'm all alone." And most notably, in this 7-minute audio piece, you hear a border agent joking about the children crying.
Bueno, aquí tenemos una orquesta.
Faltaba el maestro, a ver.
And that audio and that mindset is going to be something I touch on again at the end of this story.
Additionally, since yesterday, we also got a look inside a new tent city. This one located in Tornillo, Texas. The tent city was reportedly constructed as an overflow for immigrant teenage boys. Also, a note here, this isn't the first time tents have been used like this. In 2014, U.S. Customs and Border Protection used tents to house an influx of immigrants. But also, once again, it is important to note the main difference between 2014 and 2018 is the child separation. A lot of the photos we see from 2014 are unaccompanied minors. Now, as far as the new current photos, they were just released yesterday. They were reportedly taken last week. This by the Administration for Children and Families at Health and Human Services, because, of course, the media has not been allowed inside the facility yet. And they say that each tent can sleep up to 20 children. The tents are equipped with air conditioning, and the facility in whole can allegedly hold up to 4,000 children. And despite the pictures being very, very empty, reportedly the tent city is already open. Keep in mind, these photos were taken last week. They were just released yesterday. And according to Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke, who was at a protest outside of this facility over the weekend, he told reporters, "We were told there were 98 kids in this tent city yesterday. We were told today there are 200 kids." And at this protest, O'Rourke did something very interesting. He made this not all about Trump.
"We've all got to own this. We cannot blame this on Trump. We cannot blame this on a political party. This is America right now, and so America's got
to
show up."
In addition to this, we've also seen massive pushback from several governors. We've seen governors from Massachusetts and New York both announcing that their states will no longer deploy National Guard troops to the border. As far as the why, Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's team citing that the federal government's current actions are resulting in the inhumane treatment of children. New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo also hit on that same note, adding, "We will not be complicit in a political agenda that governs by fear and division." You also had Colorado's Governor John Hickenlooper, who yesterday signed an executive order that forbids state resources from being used to separate children from parents or legal guardians based on the grounds of immigration status. Also, unsurprisingly, we've seen a good amount of fake news spreading around this story. And one of the latest outlets to be called out for spreading fake news was the Drudge Report. This because the Drudge Report used a picture of children holding what appears to be guns alongside an article on immigrant children coming into America. Except there were a few problems with that. This because reportedly the kids in the photo are Syrian. They were in Syria. The photo was taken in 2012, and those are not real guns. They are toys. And we know this to be true because the photographer behind the image has spoken out about the use of it, explaining what was actually happening in the photo and also calling it an obscene misrepresentation of the photo's actual depiction. Then we had Ann Coulter doing Ann Coulter stuff on Fox News yesterday.
"These child actors weeping and crying on all the other networks 24/7 right now. Do not fall for it, Mr. President. I get very nervous about the president getting his news from TV." New Yorker is not a conservative publication. They describe these kids are being
coached. So sorry, we have to go.
They're given scripts to read by liberals, according to the New Yorker. Fall for the actor children.
So she takes aim at the kids that are being taken away from their parents, calling them child actors, even referencing something about the New Yorker, saying the kids are coached, which is confusing because she's talking about all of these kids and the news coverage around it now, but then she's referencing what appears to be a New Yorker article from 2011. And the connection she's trying to make there appears to be very, very weak and stupid. That article talked about university-educated Ethiopians that would lie to try and get asylum in the United States, not incredibly young children crying because they are being stripped away from their families and that being photographed or filmed. But then from that, of course, yesterday we had Kirstjen Nielsen saying that this was not a policy change. This despite Attorney General Jeff Sessions talking about a zero tolerance policy. This despite now Chief of Staff John Kelly. Back in 2017, when he was Department of Homeland Security Secretary, he said that he was considering using this as a deterrent.
"If you get some young kids who are coming in, managed to sneak into the United States with their parents, our Department of Homeland Security personnel going to separate the children from their moms and dads?"
"Yes, I am considering, in order to deter more movement along this terribly dangerous network, I am considering exactly that."
And that wasn't just a 2017 thing. Even in his new position last month when he was speaking with NPR, he said, "A big name of the game is deterrence. Family separation could be a tough deterrent, would be a tough deterrent." Another thing we saw with this story is Trump taking aim at Germany. Trump arguing on Twitter that German Chancellor Angela Merkel's more open policies towards migration and refugees have led to a crisis in the German government coalition. Tweeting, "The people of Germany are turning against their leadership as migration is rocking the already tenuous Berlin coalition. Crime in Germany is way up. Big mistake made all over Europe in allowing millions of people in who have so strongly and violently changed their culture." And today adding, "Crime in Germany is up 10% plus. Officials do not want to report these crimes since migrants were accepted. Others' countries are even worse. Be smart, America." But in response to those tweets, there has been massive pushback. Many crime statistics from Germany seeming to show the opposite. Many citing figures released back in May by the German Federal Criminal Office that showed that crime in Germany was actually at the lowest it's been in 25 years. Most notably, that total offenses in Germany were down 9.6% last year. Additionally, it says violent crime was down 2.4%, property theft down 11.8%, street
street crime down 8.6%. Cases where a crime was committed by non-Germans was down 2.7%, by Germans down 2.2%. That said, there were increases. Fraud was up 1.3%, computer fraud 2.8%, drug offenses 9.2%. Many pointing that the number of illegal border crossings dropped 79.9%, but of course that would be due to the more open policy. Now, even with those statistics, it is important to point out that migration in Germany is a political crisis. Since Merkel introduced her open-door policy back in 2015, the country has absorbed more than 1 million migrants. Immigration as an issue has weakened Merkel's party. There have been a number of growing far-right groups in the country. But that said, right now, German people as a whole are not completely abandoning Merkel and her party, and she actually remains to be one of the country's most popular politicians. Now, as far as what happens next, if the situation continues to move forward, there is not an unlikely about-face from the Trump administration. There are several potential solutions in Congress right now, and we'll mainly focus on two. The first being the Keep Families Together Act. This from Dianne Feinstein of California. It was introduced June 7th, and it would ban the separation of families at the border unless there is evidence that a child is being trafficked or abused by his or her parents. As of right now, it looks like the Democrats completely support it. There's at least one Republican that says that they would vote for it. But as of right now, it looks like any other further Republican approval, it doesn't seem likely. But we also had Republican Senator Ted Cruz come up with his own solution. Cruz writing, "All Americans are rightly horrified by the images we are seeing on the news, children in tears pulled away from their mothers and fathers. This must stop. Now, we can end this crisis by passing the legislation I am introducing this week." And his solution both seems to keep families together as well as get them out of the country faster. According to the news release, his bill would authorize new temporary shelters with accommodations to keep families together. It mandates that immigrant families will be kept together absent aggravated criminal conduct or threat of harm to children. It also would double the number of federal immigration judges from roughly 375 to 750, and it would provide expedited processing and review of asylum cases so that within 14 days, those who meet the legal standards will be granted asylum, and those who do not will be immediately returned to their home countries. Now, as far as which one will gain traction, if either of them, that remains to be seen, but we will obviously keep an eye out. So there's a story as of now. It will obviously continue to develop, but as far as where I stand on this, because I saw a lot of people asking what my opinion is, and to that I would say, plainly put, I am horrified by this situation. Something that Kirstjen Nielsen has said is that there is a crisis at the border, and a lot of people have been using that kind of mentality as a justification for what is happening. And when you compare the illegal immigration numbers this year to that of last year, it does seem like there is a drastic change, although people have pointed out that 2017 was a very weird outlier year. Many people referring to the drop in illegal immigration as the Trump effect, many people seeing, you know, what's gonna happen to those of us that try to go. And in fact, what we're seeing as far as illegal immigration in 2018 is very close to that of 2013-2014 numbers. And when you look at the entirety of the situation, partially one of the reasons that could be responsible for this increase is the crackdown on asylum seekers. You see stories around people like Wiener Berduo. Drug traffickers shot him 7 times last year. He's been trying to get asylum in the United States. He's trying to do it the right way, but he, like many others, have been stuck at the border. You see agents repeatedly turning him away, saying, "Wait in Mexico, check back again in a few hours." And of course, while every single person's story does not resemble this, when you look to someone that has gone through this and they are still stuck in this purgatory, that would lend you to think that maybe the better answer is to try and do it illegally. Well, I do personally think that illegal immigration is an important issue in this country, and we should not incentivize those to break the law. I am horrified that families are being broken up, that children are being stripped away from their parents, and I am even more troubled by the dehumanization of these people. Whether it be the Tommy Lahrens of the world oversimplifying the situation, saying we owe illegal immigrants nothing. Whether it be the Ann Coulters of the world accusing these children of being child actors. Whether it be a Border Patrol agent so numb to the human experience that he mocks the children who are crying out for their parents that they are actively being stripped away from. It just shouldn't be so easy to not think of them as real people. Real children and real lives, but also if you want to cut the heart out of the situation. Right, just from a numbers aspect, that's something that Donald Trump likes to hit on now and then, as far as, you know, we could do things differently to save money. Think about how much money it's costing to house these kids, to then process these kids, to look for family, and if no family shows up, to manage these kids in the system. All while putting even more people into our prison system that have a massive price tag per body. With the constant mention from Trump and others saying that, you know, we need a wall and, you know, lawmakers can do it, it very much feels like this is a negotiating tactic. And I say all of this while acknowledging I don't know what the perfect answer is, and I do not think that there is a perfect answer, but it does not feel like part of the equation for the perfect answer is to split up families. You want to crack down on MS-13 types? Perfect. You want to crack down on people traveling with children and it's actually human trafficking? Perfect. But unfortunately, those things are being used as a justification to go after families that are trying to flee a bad life, potentially violence. And that's something that I really want to focus on, because that's the story, the facts of the situation, and then my opinion is how I personally perceive the situation. And for you personally, you may agree, you may have greatly different feelings on this story. And wherever you land on this, I would love for you to give me your opinion in those comments down below. I used to say it to a point that got annoying, but this is not just a show. I want this to be a conversation with you. Each and every one of us, we will never see eye to eye on every single topic 100% of the time. And if you ever have felt that way, I would ask you to broaden your horizons, to also take in other points of view so you are not just regurgitating what you are consuming. And despite knowing that when you have an opinion on a topic and you share it, you completely welcome the wave of dislikes that is incredibly popular when talking about anything remotely political. But I truly believe that the only way forward is to have a conversation. So if you want to take part, I love your face. If not, don't worry. I get it. Effort, right? Life is exhausting sometimes, and with the constant 24/7 media cycle being what it is right now, it is very easy to just be exhausted and feeling beaten down by shit in the world. But hopefully we can all stay engaged in a way that's not completely toxic. Or maybe that's wishful thinking, but that's gonna be where I'm gonna end today's show. But like I said, that's where we're gonna end today's show. And of course, with this being the Philip DeFranco Show, I gave you the stories, I gave you my opinion. Now I wanna hear from you, whether it be the last story, the first one, anything in between. Let me know what you're thinking in those comments down below. Also remember, if you like this video, what I'm trying to do here, this conversation I'm trying to have, hit that like button. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button. Also remember, if you missed yesterday's Philip DeFranco Show, you wanna catch up, click or tap right there to watch that. Or maybe you need something a little bit lighter, we have the newest behind the scenes vlog right here. But that said, of course, as always, my name is Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.